Hey everybody, this is Tom Salemi at Device Talks. Welcome back to the Device Talks weekly podcast. We once again have a look into the future for you. I spoke with Rich Yang. He's the CEO of BioLink. He'll be making a fantastic presentation at Device Talks West. We dipped into a bit in the interview today, learned about his background, about the significance of this particular 25th anniversary of something significant in medtech. We'll say that. But really talked a lot about BioLink. They've got a really amazing new sensor technology that, we toss around words like game-changing, terms like game-changing, but it sounds like it's game-changing. So give that a listen for sure. Before that, of course, Chris Newmarker and I have the Newmarker's Newsmakers. So enjoy that. And we'll have some ads for you for an upcoming Device Talks conference called Device Talks West. Perhaps you've heard of it. October 16th and 17th at the Santa Clara Convention Center. As I mentioned just a few seconds ago, BioLink will be one of the presenters there, but we'll have representatives from all over medtech, structural heart, interventional, surgical robotics, neurotech, go on and on and on. Just go to west.devicetalks.com for more information, and we'd really love to see you there. It'd be great to have you. And since you're listening to this podcast and watching this video, you can save 25%, which is a couple hundred bucks, by using the code DTPOD25, and you'll save 25% off the price of registration. One final thing, we'll be having a Device Talks Tuesdays on Tuesday. Our friends at Spectrum Plastics will be on hand to talk about what are the best ways to hiring a contract manufacturer. They've invited me to sort of lead this as a robust discussion. So I'm looking forward to gaining some serious insights on how contract manufacturers work and how folks can pick the best one. So make sure you sign up for that. It's free. And again, sponsored by the folks at Spectrum Plastics. Before we begin this podcast episode, I want to spin a little tune for you called Why You Should Go to Device Talks West on October 16th and 17th at the Santa Clara Convention Center. Hit it. This is Tom Salemi of Device Talks. We're excited to bring you another great program for Device Talks West here at the Santa Clara Convention Center, talking new business models, new missions, and new intentions. I can't wait until we fill this auditorium with MedTech's best engineers, entrepreneurs, and executives. This is Device Talks West.
The foundation of connected care is the who we are that drives what we do. We shape our environment, and then our environment shapes us.
Thoughtful discussions of how it impacts not only markets, but society and the workforce.
What is it doing for the patient? And that's what our technology needs to be.
I look at what the standard of care is today. Are there areas where we can improve upon the standard of care, or are there areas where there are significant gaps? And that's what drives me.
What am I trying to accomplish? You know, getting back to that core, what problem am I trying to solve? Am I going to do something new and really move the needle for patient outcomes? So there's a ton of work to be done, and that's what keeps me excited.
Why did you choose MedTech? Find out at Device Talks West on October 16th and 17th. Register at west.devicetalks.com.
The folks that are saving lives, they're all here.
All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
Mr. Newmarker, how are you, sir?
Doing well, Tom. Doing well. Happy fall.
Happy fall to you. You're doing well, and I hear you're doing laundry just like me.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
We both just swapped the load in the dryer before we hopped on
Friday
the call.
Friday is laundry day, it seems, in both of our houses. Today's like, wow, look that piled that up. Because we're busy. We're doing the job, man. Like, it's like,
exactly, yeah. And we need all of our nice t-shirts to be clean so right. We don't look like complete scrubinos on these Zoom calls.
Exactly. Gotta get the shirts pressed for Device Talks West in just 3 weeks. 3 weeks, right? Two and a half?
Yeah. Funny story with that. I had my suit coat out at MedTech Vision and I left it in my hotel room.
Oh man.
And I called them. I said, can you hold on to it for 3 weeks? Cause I'm coming right back. So, after I get off at SFO, I got to stop at the Home Suites in Belmont and grab my suit coat for Device Talks nice. West. So yeah. Yeah.
Gotta love so that.
I gotta look forward to that. I got a sole button on there too. I lost a button.
Nice.
So if you see me without a button, just know that I tried and just gave up. Yeah. But anyway.
You know, maybe we could just like, we could Silicon Valley it up and just like have like t-shirts and dress shirts.
We could start a trend. Maybe like, hey, that dude's only got one button on his coat. He lost his upper button. I like the way that looks.
It's like the way, yeah, you know, it's like, yeah. I think the whole thing of having the bottom button unbuttoned, I think that was King Edward. Edward, seriously, it was like, who's George V's dad? The king between Victoria and George V, he was rotund enough that he kept that bottom button unbuttoned. And people were like, that looks good. We should do that too. And, you know, so.
Yeah, either that or let's all do that or else he'll kill us.
Yeah. I mean, it was the early 1900s. He couldn't behead anybody. He'd be like, behead him. Like, oh, that's funny.
All right. You're right. They probably weren't in fear for their lives, but I didn't know that was the origin of that.
Yes.
I was actually going to make a joke about it, but you are a fountain of really useful information.
I am, yes. I'm the guy you want at bar trivia, Tom.
You want, you want me on that bar.
You want me there. All right.
Let's roll the new Marcus news.
We'll save the pumpkin spice latte talk for another week, and we will do that.
Yeah, we've
done enough. We tortured people enough. Let's let us get into what's important. You know, the news of the medical device industry. So the new Marcus newsmakers,
number five.
We've got neurovascular tech company Route 92 Medical. They added $50 million in funding, an extension to their oversubscribed Series F financing round. And Route 92 plans to use the proceeds to accelerate the commercialization of their neurovascular intervention portfolio.
And Route 92 Medical. raised money from some interesting firms. Novo Holdings was an investor. Norwest, big investor. U.S. Venture Partners, oldie and still goodie. And Innova Health, but the Vertical Group, which I hadn't heard of in a very long time. They were a very secretive group when I was back in the day.
Secretive.
When I first started covering venture capital, I'd have a Word doc with a list of venture firms that I would call just every month. And Vertical Group very rarely called me back. They were they didn't like to share what they were working on. So it apparently works for them. They're still there investing in cool companies. And Route 92 Medical looks very cool. Another big investment in the neurovascular space.
And it's an important technology because they're seeking to improve the efficiency of endovascular thrombectomy procedures, and these are like about quickly restoring blood flow to the brain following like an acute ischemic stroke, and then there's definitely a need for better and faster treatment of strokes when they happen, because otherwise,
absolutely,
yeah. So it's like it's
and we've seen big financings in this space before. Imperative Care raised significant funds. I forget the amount. It was over $100 million previously.
Yeah.
We'll have them at Device Talks West. Kirsten Carroll of Can Do Health will be there. So folks can we'll be looking more at how technology can help folks who after they've suffered a stroke, so stroke survivors.
Exactly.
And that's going to use robotics and other cool services. So folks can check that out.
And just to keep the stroke theme going, number four on the list, this is actually, I should have mentioned, like, this number five was from Associate Editor Sean Hooley. Number four is from Associate Editor Sean Hooley. Sean is so productive. He's just really the engine of Mass Device, frankly. I mean, I don't know. He's so valuable.
He's super, super talented. Anyway, super,
yes. So. All right. We've sung Sean's praises enough, but he's great, man. So, but number four on the list, we've got, Stryker acquiring Nikko Corporation and, not disclosing the terms of the deal. Nikko has, has like a systematic approach, for tumor and intracerebral hemorrhage procedures. So this is some more tech that's related to the brain, and actually like they've got a commitment to neuro. Stryker has a commitment to neurotechnology through tumor and stroke care. So this is like kind of Stryker expanding its reach in that space as well.
And you had written previously that Stryker was going to be in an M&A mood this year. Kevin Lobo suggested as much on an analyst call, and indeed they have, in addition to this one.
Staying good on it.
Sean mentioned Care.ai.
Yeah.
Artelon, Molly Surgical, Virtus Medical. And For Web Medical, which I had forgotten about, the foot and ankle one. So we'll have Andy Pierce, who's the head of MedSurg and Neurotechnology at Stryker. He'll be a keynote at Device Talks West. I'll make sure I'll ask him about a lot of these deals and what they'll be doing in the future.
My gosh. Who is not going to be at Device Talks West?
Be there or be square? That's a good question. I pity them, frankly, if they're not going to be there. I just think the next day they're going to be like, oh gosh.
Yep, exactly.
I've missed so much. I'm not sure if I can continue in this industry.
The FOMO. The FOMO will be oppressive.
Roll on to number three, Chris Neumacher. Another kind of familiar theme, something we've been seeing a lot more of lately.
Yeah, this kind of goes in with like all the advancements we're seeing in the, in the spine surgery tech space. Jim Hammeran, we just had our Minvasive webinar series on medical design outsourcing, and one of the big things was an interview yesterday. We're talking on Friday. This was on Thursday with a DePuy Synthes, spine tech official, and you're talking about how they're finding all these ways with automation, robotics to basically like take out these painful things for spine surgeons so they can focus on what's important during a surgery. And Medtronic and Siemens Healthineers are very active in this space, and they just now announced a partnership. They're going to expand their spine surgery ecosystem together.
Absolutely. No, it's an interesting, I was thinking more about the partnership element, and we talked about Medtronic and Abbott partnering early on, and maybe this is recency bias, maybe I'm just seeing it because I want to, but it just seems that we're seeing more of these sort of partnerships being pursued by Medtronic in particular. I don't know if anyone has insights on whether that's a new strategy or just something I have finally woken up to, but it'll be interesting to track.
They have the private equity investment around diabetes tech.
Private equity, you can see, because that's just money for services. But to work with a quote-unquote competitor, another OEM, as they have been.
Big OEM like that.
So, good for Medtronic and Siemens.
We'll have to keep an eye on this and see what's next.
Absolutely. All right, let us roll on to number two. This is an ongoing story. Or we'll see if it continues to ongo, but it's been an ongoing story.
We've got Joe Chiani resigned, from Masimo, after losing the proxy battle with Paladin Capital Management. So he made good on what he said he was what he was going to do, they've now got a interim CEO, Michelle Brennan,
former J&J executive.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it's good to see another, at least for now, another woman as a CEO. We do not have that many in med tech right now in the big companies. They're looking for, they've retained Korn Ferry to help them in CEO succession planning to find a new CEO over there.
Okay. And as we mentioned last week, board members include former Stryker CFO Bill Jellison, former Agilent Technology Senior VP and Chief Technology Officer Darlene Solomon. And they joined Michelle Brennan and Quentin Coffey on the board. So they now have control of the company in every perceivable way. So we'll see where Masimo goes, how it changes.
Yeah, and frankly, the analysts, they're BTIG analysts kept their buy rating. You know, they basically felt that the. That the leadership changes should, you know, kind of confirm expectations of what was going to, you know, happen now going forward, you know, now that, you know, Keanu's out over at Masimo.
Absolutely. All right. Good. Number two. Let's roll into number one.
Number one is we have a roundup from Sean of the top 10 urological device stories of 2024 so far. And this this ties in with, it happens to be Urology Week 2024. So it seemed like a good time to kind of update everybody on what the top stories of that space was. You know, always good to key into those weeks or days, I suppose. We have news about, you know, Euromems, you know, with a sacral, they're smart. It's a smart automated artificial urinary sphincter, treats stress urinary incontinence, but they raised another, you know, $47 million in a Series C. You know, that's one of the top news. We have news about Exonix. Mm-hmm. You know, we got Medtronic, GI Genius, and I'd say, like, you know, go make a guess what you think the top news was, and, you know, go read through this great roundup on Mass Device that Sean has. You know, the top 10 urological device stories of 2024 so far.
A lot of big names in there. A lot of big technology, surgical robotics, AI, advanced imaging. So. Many big companies included. So great roundup by Sean Hooley. Yeah. He's the best.
Yep, really awesome.
All right, Chris Newmarker. Great Newmarker's Newsmakers
list.
Always
good, man.
And we'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week, man.
Hello, Device Talkers. It's Kayleen Brown, Managing Editor of Device Talks. We are so thrilled to bring you our Women in MedTech Luncheon happening at Device Talks West, October 17th. So from 12:15 to 1:15 p.m., we are bringing together women in the medical device industry and our allies for a one-hour networking session. I also have the greatest opportunity to sit down with Cecilia Soriano, the President of Infusion Therapies and Technologies at Baxter International. Cecilia and I will be talking about how the industry can come together to better support women in medtech in more senior medtech roles, how our allies can support us, how more tenured women in medtech can support those who are newer to the industry, and how the more tenured of us can learn from those just entering the industry. So please, please, please join us on October 17th at Device Talks West for the Women in MedTech Luncheon. And a huge thank you to our generous, generous sponsors, Aptix, Capstan Medical, GlobalLogic, Integer Holdings, and Westfall Technic. We couldn't host our networking session if it weren't for your huge support. So thank you, thank you, thank you, and thank you for supporting female leadership in the medical device industry. For more information, and of course to register, please go to west.devicetalks.com. I'll see you October 17th.
Well, Rich Yang, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Tom. Always excited to be here to talk tech with you. So thank you.
You're my pleasure. You're let folks know the setting. You're on a road show. I think you're about to appear at a conference. You've got a lot going on. You're in a hotel room. We've all used hotel Wi-Fi. I want to let folks know that you squeeze us in so we could talk a little bit about BioLink, about your career, and hopefully preview what's going to be happening at Device Talks West. We'll be speaking on October 16th. So Rich, let's start with you. What brought you into the medtech industry? You started off in the diabetes space, correct?
Yes, 25 years in the
Amazing.
Diabetes space. So, yeah, actually, this month is the 25th anniversary since
Happy
the first FDA. Yeah, actually, since the first FDA approval of the very first glucose sensor.
Oh, interesting.
So, Yeah, 25 years.
Oh, we should do. So, we should be doing something about that on Mass Device. I'll let Chris Neumarker know. All right.
Yeah, that was in 1999, and back at that time, I was with a company called MiniMed, and I was amongst one of the first few product managers to cover continuous glucose monitoring. And so, you know, it's humbling to see 25 years have passed so quickly and how widely adopted this technology now is.
You were new to the industry, but you were part of the industry. And I just, you remember the date. Is this one of those dates that is kind of a before or after date for you? Like there was life before this and life after? Is it one of those pivotal dates?
You know, I've been a believer in the technology. I mean, having continuous information stream, there's nothing more important for personalized medicine. And if you think about personalized medicine, you know, diabetes has really been the pioneering domain to implement like automated insulin delivery, loop control, insulin delivery, you know, combined with glucose sensing technology. So I've been a big believer for decades, and it's just it's so difficult to bring new sensor technologies to market. It's it's probably easier to develop a rocket to fly to the moon than to develop a continuous glucose sensor. And over 25 years, there's still only a handful of companies that are in this space, and it is incredibly, overwhelmingly, technically difficult to get to the finish line. So, yeah, so I spent 8 years at Medtronic. Medtronic acquired MiniMed, and went on to spend a decade at Dexcom, and I've been at BioLink now for just under 4 years. So,
and you had a little hiatus in endoscopy, right?
Yes, yeah. Spent some time in neurosurgery, and came back to the diabetes space very quickly thereafter.
It's just an opportunity that you tried, and you realized diabetes was part of your professional DNA?
You know, bringing new technologies to market has been something that I have been very fortunate to do. I've had great mentors, and I find neurosurgery and neurotechnologies equally compelling and challenging. Mm-hmm. And they're the real new frontiers in medicine. And so I had an opportunity to bring some new technologies in that domain. And long story short, the diabetes community has been close to me, family members, friends with type 1 diabetes and type 2 diabetes, and it's very personal to me. So it wasn't the same in neurotechnologies and neurosurgery. So it came back very quickly into diabetes. So I left neurosurgery to go to Dexcom. And so that was an early time at Dexcom before there was reimbursement, before these devices were widely used. And so I had an opportunity to build. So building is really what excites me. And I was fortunate to have some opportunities to do that along the road in diabetes. And yeah, neurosurgery, you know, it was very exciting, but very demanding as well. But happy to be here in the diabetes space.
That's great. So we'll talk about BioLink in a moment, but just one more career bullet point. You were a managing partner at 618 Ventures. Was this a venture firm? And how did you enjoy that experience?
Yeah, we spin out a venture firm, and it's a growth fund. And BioLink was our only non-revenue generating investment. And
so, we made and you chose exception. That one to be the CEO.
Actually, yeah, it's a funny story. I actually vetoed investment in BioLink because our team really liked the semiconductor manufacturing aspect of what BioLink was doing in its early years. And when we were doing diligence, I was the managing partner that vetoed an investment, and I vetoed an investment several times because I've been in, you know, continuous glucose monitoring for decades, and I just couldn't see that this could possibly work. So how in the world would you miniaturize a glucose sensor to be 200 times smaller than a human hair filament and be able to sense continuously? I just couldn't believe it. And so I told the two co-founders of the company, Jared Tangney, who's a PhD from UC San Diego, and Joshua Windmiller, who's also a PhD from UC San Diego. I told them, hey, show me some human early feasibility, and then we'll consider coming in. So when we first looked at them, they didn't have really any human data. So they came back and showed some human feasibility, and we ended up investing in Series A and Series B.
That's amazing.
And that
I think speaks to your character of someone who's able to you know turn their around their opinion on something and not hold fast. And also, I would say to the opportunities before you, if you at one moment had doubts and you decide to throw all in with a company like BioLink, certainly they've proven themselves to you. So,
oh hey Tom, I would have to say, in retrospect, I could not have imagined how challenging this could be, because lo and behold, a global pandemic came shortly thereafter, and the macroeconomic environment to raise capital was ridiculously difficult. And then the global supply chain crisis, and then the banking crisis. And so just the compounding of all of the things that are outside of our direct control happened during these past 4 years. Imagine trying to enroll people in clinical trials in the middle of a global pandemic and where the target patient population has the highest morbidity rates with COVID.
Oh my gosh.
And so the development efforts to do this when you couldn't enroll people in clinical trials and you couldn't source parts and components because of the global supply chain crisis, and something that used to cost 20 cents cost, you know, $20, right? And we don't have that kind of cash to throw at, you know, extraordinary price gouging during that period. So the impossible task ahead of us was so great. I could not have imagined that we would get to this point. And so if you don't mind, I really owe a shout out to the team that stuck through it, because I could not be more humbled to be working alongside bona fide pioneers who gave it their all despite all of these challenges. Unconditionally. And it's quite an incredible team of 100 people we have.
That's great. No, we're all about honoring medtech innovators and professionals. So I'm happy to take time for that shout out. So you joined November 2020. I want to put a pin in the impact of COVID on the company, because I feel like this is a good time to introduce people to BioLink. What are you trying to do? Talk a bit about your product and your approach and where you're at.
So BioLink was born with the principle of developing a new platform for biowearables. And it's really a platform approach. The first product is intended for continuous glucose, but the principles are really profound. So the company was founded to leverage semiconductor manufacturing principles and technologies to etch tiny microsensors that are robust enough to access a compartment of the skin for biosensing. And for those of us that have been in industry for a long time, we have known that the best place to measure a biomarker is actually in the skin, in particular, a compartment in the skin that sits right on top of the microcapillaries in the capillary bed. So the reason for that is because the skin is very highly metabolically active. So if you're going to measure an analyte, you want to have access as close as possible to the capillary bed. So in the challenge has been, how do you miniaturize sensors that small? I mean, if I were to touch something that's 200 times smaller than a human hair filament, it would break. It would be so fragile, it would break. And there are not that many ways to miniaturize sensors. For example, you know, stainless steel microneedles have been around for a long time for you know, hollow microneedles for drug delivery applications and things like this. But very few people knew and understood the principles of using silicon as a start material. It's very cheap. The MEMS manufacturing processes for the smartphone chips have grown to billions and billions of units around the world. So the economies of scale are here now, where it wasn't 20 years ago or even 10 years ago. And so it's a cheap material, but it is more robust in terms of its hardness than titanium and steel at this scale. And so to be able to access the upper strata of the reticular dermis, which is really the papillary dermis we're interested in, there's no bleeding there. There are no nerve endings there, so you don't feel any pain. You don't draw any blood, which means you don't have biohazard disposal waste. And more importantly, there's no scar tissue formation in that space and compartment of the skin. So we don't go deep enough to create scar tissue formation. So this is really, truly the most non-invasive experience that can be delivered, but using traditional electrochemistry, which has a handshake with a target molecule that you're intending to measure. So this is truly the pinnacle of biosensing, but very few companies really had the capacity in terms of the innovation. The technology is not limited to just the microsensors made on a silicon wafer. The unfortunate part of trying to enter into the domain of glucose sensing requires a company to have 4 or 5 core competencies that each and of its, you know, each one of which could be a standalone company. So, you know, to make more sense of this, we not only have to be almost a virtual foundry because we have to help invent the proprietary processes to etch microneedles into silicon wafers, but we also have to be profoundly experts in material science, right? We have to be able to invent and develop new polymers, right? New membranes that would be coated on these tiny microsensors. And using electrodeposition, which is very similar to electroplating, so it's a precision membrane deposition that hasn't been done before. We also have to be consumer electronics gurus because the wearable component is something that people will wear and interact with. We have to be experts in data science and algorithm design. We have to be experts in software, right? So, you know, 50% of the user experience is based on the applications that people are using every day. So, you know, 5 core competencies embodied in one company to deliver a solution that could be viable. So it is extremely overwhelming for any new startup to accomplish all of this under one umbrella, especially within this current macroeconomic and financing environment.
Mm-hmm. Well, you were kind enough to give Jim Hammer and I a presentation a few months back, which is why we invited you for Device Talks West. And I even remember the imagery being very, very captivating and stark. So I'm sure folks there are going to really appreciate what they'll see. But for the sake of this podcast, we don't have the benefit of that. Describe what, you know, what will folks, let's fast forward to the future. You've got the approvals you need. Someone's using one of your sensors. Where is it? And what are they seeing? Is it just a tiny dot on a finger? What could this sensor potentially look like? And what could it? What are all the things it may do?
Sure. Because we didn't have any legacy manufacturing, we didn't have any legacy hardware, and unfortunately, we had to take all of the components of what we designed off the shelf, right, in the middle of a supply chain crisis. So we decided to do and put things into our wearable that traditionally haven't been done in biosensing. Continuous glucose sensing. So we built a wearable that could be placed on your forearm, on the upper forearm. And the reason why we chose the forearm is because for the large majority of people with diabetes, metabolic health literacy is extremely low. You know, 90%+ of the population of people with diabetes don't use insulin. And so, and for decades, blood glucose meters have been available, but people just, you know, don't like needles and don't like sticking themselves and drawing blood and getting an episodic value. And even for people that do it, it's not done often enough to really see trends and really help understand people's relationship to foods they like, their relationship with the medications they're taking, their relationship with, you know, activity or lack of. And so metabolic health literacy is incredibly low. And as a student of behavioral science, for decades being in the space, we understand that there are 3 things that need to happen to drive cognitive restructuring for sustainable behavior change. And that is real-time feedback passively when teachable moments arise. And how do you do that? So on the forearm, we discovered that if we can put some form of display in our wearable so that users can see real-time feedback when glucose excursions happen passively, that cognitive restructuring can happen without a doctor or a dietitian or a coach on an app to tell you your relationship to those things that you're doing. So I'll give you an example. If I drank a glass of orange juice and I'm wearing the BiLink sensor. And by the way, I just have to quickly add a disclaimer. We're not yet cleared or approved by the FDA, so everything I'm talking about is investigational. We use LED lights on our wearables. So blue, we have a blue light that's flashing that lets you know that you're in your target range. And we have a yellow light that turns on when your glucose levels rise and your glucose levels are high. So if I drink a glass of orange juice and my sensor goes from blue to yellow, immediately I have that passive real-time feedback when a teachable moment happened, and I can correlate that orange juice to my high glucose. And so I could make a few decisions from there. I could stop drinking that orange juice. I could drink less of it in the future, or I might decide, hey, I love orange juice, I'm going to finish it, but maybe I take a walk for 10 or 15 minutes after to bring my glucose levels down. So to have that kind of direct feedback is novel, right? There is no autonomous sensor that's ever been done in the world, largely because most of the glucose sensors, or all of the glucose sensors, are worn in a place on your body that you can't see it. So,
And you have to look at an app or something, right? I mean, to get the data.
Yeah. Which is great. I mean, using an app is great. Sure. But for those of us that have been using this for decades, what do I do when I get these alerts all the time? I get annoyed by alerts and alarms on my app, and I snooze them, right? So I'm not going to learn anything if I snooze these things. So this passive feedback has been a very profound. We were almost lucky that we landed on this, because its profound impact on behavior change was greater than what we had expected when we started doing some of our primary research. So that's one. Number two is we actually capture activity. So we have an accelerometer. We have activity that's captured passively. We have the ability to derive rest and periods of sleep. And so being able to understand if you're getting enough sleep, how active you are or not, and your glucose levels, it gives you the context around a person to really start driving insights for metabolic health literacy. I'm sorry for being so long-winded. It's just...
No, this is fascinating. It sounds like when you take your car into the shop and they plug in the diagnostic machine and tell you what's going on.
I mean, because of all of our lessons learned, Tom, we decided to put into our vision a charter that ensures that everything we do is done in a way that informs and inspires. So that is an absolute charter that we have to do things in ways that are positive, right? Not condescending, not embarrassing to the users, very thoughtful about the approach, even from the color schema and the light schema. We chose blue for a reason, not green. We chose yellow for a reason. And so there are many aspects to this that were thoughtfully debated for years. If only you could see the heated debates we've had, because it's incredibly difficult to keep things simple, right? And that's probably the single greatest challenge I gave to our team was we have to make things simple. This is an incredibly complex and sophisticated technology, but to the user, it needs to be the most simple thing. So for example, those lights turn off automatically. So if you go into a dark room, you're about to sleep, there's an ambient light sensor that turns off the lights.
Oh, that's smart. And, you're not going to be keeping your spouse up with your with your blue or yellow light. So being mindful of your time, I know you have to rush to another meeting. Again, you're not FDA approved, but if this were to work out, is diabetes your first market? Because, I mean, there's obviously, as you mentioned, a whole number of consumer applications that and other applications, training, physical fitness, and more that this would work in. What are your intentions? And do you see a partnering sort of model? Do you see manufacturing everything yourself? How might that play out?
Thanks, Tom. It is. Diabetes is our first market, and our first product is intended for people with type 2 diabetes not using insulin. And then we intend to expand our indications as we continue to scale our operations and manufacturing to serve people with diabetes that use insulin. It's a very mature market, highly reimbursed. So we've got to get to a manufacturing scale to be able to provide product and serve the type 1 diabetes community and people with type 2 diabetes on insulin. But beyond that, we talked about BiLink being a platform. And so glucose is one of the analytes we can measure. We've also proven feasibility around continuous lactate sensing. And so in the talk coming up in a few weeks, I'll be talking about and showing some early feasibility data with a professional soccer team in Europe that has taken continuous lactate sensing to peak performance. And that will be something I'll be sharing with some data to show in person there. And then we are leveraging a new technology for electrochemistry using single strands of DNA called aptamers. And we use single strands of DNA. We genetically evolve them with partners to recognize and bind to biomarkers that traditionally were not possible to measure. There are only a handful of enzymes that are found in nature that could be used for conventional biosensing. Everything else is not possible, nor has it been possible until now. So we are in the first era in human history to be able to synthesize biology. So we're taking these technologies and putting them on the tips of our microsensors. So I'll give you an example. Why haven't we seen a hormone sensor to date? Why aren't there sensors that could monitor infectious disease like COVID antigens and COVID antibodies? Well, because there are no natural enzymes that could be used to do things like that. So we are intending to have a first in human on this technology imminently, and we'll be looking at measuring hormones like cortisol and others that would really help transform the delivery of care and really start the pathway of enabling personalized medicine and precision medicine. So our charter above and beyond glucose is to provide the highest resolution, high fidelity information on the human condition from home without any pain or bleeding and to be the front end of that ecosystem that could enable true personalized medicine, reduce the global cost of care, and couldn't be more humbled to be on this pathway with an incredible team.
It's amazing. Real quick, what is that lactate? I'm not clear on what that with the soccer team. What are you measuring? Is that like physical stress when you're
lactate
working some too hard?
Yeah. Have you worked out so hard or even worked in your yard so hard that you were sore the next day? Well, that's
lactic acid.
Yeah, lactic acid buildup. Yeah. So continuous lactate will be the next big thing, like VO2 max for endurance and peak performance for athletes. And so to give you an example, in a soccer match, you know, if your best players have to be subbed out in the 70th minute because a lack of endurance, well, this technology could really help improve training, improve endurance while reducing the risk of injury. So your best players can be on the field for the full 90-minute game, and that could be the difference in winning championships. And so we're on the cusp of a new marker that will really help transform human peak performance. And the closest thing that we could, to this that have been enabled for, athletes and elite athletes have been VO2 max. So yeah, continuous lactate also has applications in the hospital. Of course, lactate is an early measure of sepsis. So yeah, there are many applications for lactate, but
And final question, because I'm going to be greedy, but just taking the pin out of the COVID conversation, I have to imagine this company is different than it would have been if you hadn't had to endure all that you did during COVID and find new ways of getting things done. How different is the company, do you think, today that it might have been if that unfortunate global disaster had never happened?
Yeah.
I imagine it tightened things up a great deal.
Yes. Resilience. Two things, resilience and innovation. There's nothing like do or die, invent and get this done or die, right? I mean, that kind of time pressure and resource constraints forces innovation and the pace of innovation that we haven't seen in this domain before. And a lot of it was also a stroke of luck. We were intending to raise $30 million in the middle of the pandemic. We became oversubscribed and raised $105. And if we didn't do that, we would have folded. We would not have had enough cash to get to the critical milestones we needed to show that this technology works and it works well. So a little bit of luck, a lot of resilience, but invention, if I had one big lesson learned, invention happens when you put a lot of pressure on very smart people with a very tight time boundary, and we've pulled off the impossible. So 99% of companies in glucose sensing, never make it to this point. So, yeah, big lesson learned for all of us.
Amazing. Exciting stuff. I'll let you get on with your day. I'm really grateful for you being part of Device Talks West. I think folks coming out will be amazed at what you're working on. Thanks for taking the time today.
Thanks, Tom. I can't thank you enough. Very humbled to be spending time with you today. Big fan of yours. So thank you for all the great work that you do.
I appreciate that.
Well, that is a wrap. Thanks so much for joining us on this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. Once again, use the code DTPOD25 to join Richard Yang and others at Device Talks West on October 16th and 17th at the Santa Clara Convention Center. All seriousness, as you heard, BioLink is a pretty cool company, and it's just one of many, many, many that we'll have there. So please join us at the Santa Clara Convention Center on October 16th and 17th. Join us on Tuesday for the Device Talks Tuesdays from Spectrum Plastics. And do us a few favors for the podcast. Follow us on your favorite podcast player. It's Device Talks Podcast Network, so you don't miss this or any future episodes coming out from our MedTech Device Talks Podcast Network. And please do share this episode on social media. Please do give us a ranking. And if you don't do any of that, just at least connect with me on LinkedIn, please. Tom Salemi, Editorial Director of Device Talks. If you're in a connecting mood, connect with Chris Newmarker of Mass Device and Kayleen Brown, our amazing Managing Editor. Connect with us all on LinkedIn. All right, folks, thanks for listening, and we'll have another episode coming up for you next week. More cool tech, and more cool tech that'll be at Device Talks West. So use the code DTPOD25 and save yourself some dough. Take care, everybody.